discretion is advised.
Live from Glasgow, Scotland, it's time for the revolution in professional wrestling radio as Robert and Kenny prepare to take you inside the ropes.
Hello everyone and welcome to a very special episode of Inside the Ropes. We are live from the studio apartment. No, we're not. I'm live from Glasgow. Kenny is live from somewhere else in Glasgow. And we are here to have a conversation about a rather eventful 24 hours that has just happened. So, will we just get right into it, Kenneth?
Sure. I have a Peroni. I'm good to go.
Okay. So, obviously, people who follow you on Twitter, as I've said before, I'm not sure that there are many people left who don't. They would have seen yesterday via your social media channels that you have decided to part ways with What Culture and What Culture Pro Wrestling. And you did put out a statement because you think so much of yourself that was necessary. However, Kenny decided, because a lot of the people that he has accrued as followers since he started working there, well, a lot of them can't read, so it probably would be better for there also to be an audio option for people.
People have lasted 90 seconds and now they're switching off after being mortally offended.
Kidding, obviously. I just messed around. So I know that a lot of people are tuning in because they are curious about it and they're not here to be insulted, which is a shame because that's probably going to happen. But let's talk a little bit about it, obviously. So we started Inside the Ropes in January 2012. It was a simpler time. Daniel Bryan was the world champion.
Trump was a reality star.
Trump was on TV, but the kind of TV that you could ignore. There would be sort of thermonuclear ramifications. Anyway, let's not get into that. It was a simpler time. The Rock was good. Anyway, and then, as you said in your statement, about 18 months ago, you began to work with What Culture, the website, before there was even such a thing as What Culture Pro Wrestling. And I remember the first conversation we had about it, and you said, you know, I'm going to spend some time working with these guys because they were going to pay you, basically, you know, because at that point in time, Inside the Ropes wasn't exactly, you know, keeping anybody's bills paid. When those gimmicks come in the mail, the ICR was not paying for them. So it made absolute sense for you to do that. And at that point, it was just writing, really. You were just writing those lists And then your role there began to expand, as did the sort of profile of the website. No small part due to the YouTube stars and all of the sort of stuff that comes with that. And to sort of segue into my first question, unknown to a lot of people, this isn't actually the first time you quit there. this is the most recent time that you've decided to part ways, but this is very different, I feel, from the other times where there's perhaps been some dispute that has led to you taking a very short-term departure. So why is this different? Why this time for the people who are... We're not really going to cover the... You know, your statement's there. It's on your Facebook. It's on your Twitter. If people want to go read that, you can go read that. You know, we're not actually going to read that out. I do fully believe that all your Twitter followers can read. It's just... Let's start from that point of view. What makes this time different?
So part of the... First of all, it is kind of ridiculous that Robert is kind of interviewing me here. But, like, the reason is... First of all, to give him ammunition that I'm an egomaniac, because he enjoys that.
Yeah.
But secondly... Like, I would just ramble otherwise, so it just makes more sense for you to ask me questions about it. So, when I made the decision to quit yesterday, I made sure to put it out on Facebook and put it out on Twitter, kind of so that I couldn't back out of it this time. Because, like, okay. I've spoke to you before privately and be like, I'm done, I'm not going back, blah, blah. And then, like, 3 days later, you'd be like, what, are you gone? Because you're still there. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going back. Like, you know. So the best way I can kind of describe it is, like, when I started, I was like, oh, this is really cool, and it's going to be really good. And, like, I do like all of the people on the channel, and all the, like, the Adams and Jack and Ross and Simon and Sam and all the people that I do genuinely go on with them. We're friends. There's no, like, you know, I'm not making that up. But one of the people in charge is erratic in terms of just how things are dealt with. And I find it very difficult to work in that environment. And... I was fired because I wouldn't hand over Inside the Ropes to them.
This was a while ago.
This was the end of 2015 when I was given an. So when I took the job, the whole you know, part of the, and I, like, this is not me being negative. I'm just telling you what happened. So I still like Walk Culture. I had a very good conversation with one of the bosses today where we sort of wished each other well. So it's not like it's negative. I'm just trying to explain the story a little bit. So it's more like people understand me a little bit more, or why I feel the way I feel about things.
Cool.
When I got the job, it was discussed with me that I could keep doing Inside the Ropes on the side, and, you know, Walk Culture would be a separate thing. And then 2 months later, we announced the tour for, like, Scott Steiner, and one of the people in charge decided to, like, get really angry and fire me because I wouldn't hand over Inside the Ropes, which was never part of the deal. So that happened, and then I came back, and then, like you say, I was doing some writing, and the writing was always pretty well received, I think. You know, I did those, like, articles on, like, my trips to WrestleMania and all that sort of stuff, and all of a sudden, out of the blue, I was told one day that my writing is not good enough for the website, so there's no longer a position for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so that happened, and then I was told that the only way I could work there is if I moved to Newcastle, and I couldn't move to Newcastle for a couple of reasons, so I said I'd be willing to go into Newcastle part-time. And then that's kind of like, there's a couple of things where since then I've left, and I think it's just all the things that have happened have kind of chipped away a little bit of my enthusiasm of being there. And like, I think it's just like there's a million things I could say. Well, this happened and that happened, da, da, da. And it's a lot of it's miscommunication as opposed to actually somebody trying to be nasty or anything. But it's just, I always felt like I was not as valuable to Walk Culture as the other YouTubers, because they do Walk Culture as their full time thing, whereas I've always done Walk Culture but also done Inside the Ropes. You know, so there's always been two separate things. And that's been a conflict, and because I've never really felt that if I hand over Inside the Ropes, well, first of all, it's not mine to hand over, it's yours as well, you know, it's not mine to just give to somebody, but I never felt it would be in safe hands, you know. Like, an example is the Wrestle Culture podcast that everybody bangs on about. Like, I have podcasted for Inside the Ropes in my bathroom at 2 in the morning when all other rooms in my house have been, like, like somebody's been sleeping over and they've been sleeping in my room and then people in the living room. So I've been in the bathroom. I've podcasted at all times of the day because like that's how much it means for me to make sure stuff goes out. Whereas at What Culture, like it's not really thought of as that. You know, it's just kind of sometimes stuff goes out, sometimes doesn't. And I'm not blaming that on the guys that record with me or anything, but it's just that's what it is. So it's hard to kind of take pride as much in stuff that's not as like valuable, you know, and like with the guys who do the YouTube stuff, like the Adams and Ross and Jack, you know, they've got tangible, you know, they do YouTube videos that get very big hits, and I'm not a person who has a character there or does a video series that draws in a lot of hits, so you know, it's more difficult to kind of quantify me being there and what I do and different things like that. So yeah, but anyway, fast forward to yesterday. I just, you know, the things that I've said before about, you know, I don't like erraticness in how I'm dealt with. I felt that was happening again, and other people were being brought into it, and I just didn't really like it. So I'd already decided about a month ago or 2 months ago in my head, I was like, this is going to be a short term thing now. Like, I can't handle the working environment anymore, and you know, I'm going to try and go at some point. And then there was just a conversation that happened yesterday with one of the management that I just thought, nah, like I like to be spoken to in a different way. So I just said, you know, I'm going to make today my last day. And that was it. So it was...
Sorry, finish your sentence if you will.
And then the other member of management who I got on very well with, he called me today, wished me all the best, and we had a nice conversation. So, you know... No hard feelings, but it was just time to go. And like people who watch and listen, like they could tell that like part of my kind of persona was like reluctantly being there, you know. And like that was kind of, if I hated being there, I wouldn't be there. That's it. But it was very clear that I was never really a What Culture guy. I was always like kind of their part, you know. I was like I'm not the Brock Lesnar because I don't bring in any hits, but like I'm like the, I don't know, somebody who comes in just part time and doesn't really affect the day-to-day. So yeah, I just felt like I want to move on. I want to grow inside the ropes, so why stick around and put up with, you know, things that you don't really want to put up with?
Fair. A question that came in first from Usheen Torme on Twitter, and I think it's something that's probably a few people have asked it, and I know the answer, but I feel like it's going to linger if people don't mention it. That he asked, was there something to do with the Alberto Del Rio situation with regards to his appearances at What Culture Pro Wrestling over the weekend and his lack of appearances with Inside the Ropes or in Birmingham? That's obviously not the case, correct?
Yeah, no, nothing to do with that at all. The El Patron thing was, for reasons that I don't think is fair to go into, and this is more Alberto stuff, it's not really getting into the What Culture, but I just felt it wasn't a good idea for us to go ahead with the Alberto show on Monday night. Alberto wanted to go ahead. I think that his, stuff that he had going on was more important for him to just kind of deal with, and that's what he's doing, and you know, him and I are in good terms, so... But I can understand timing-wise why that would maybe be something that people would think would be an issue.
Yeah, timing wise certainly, but as you say, he's on good terms with ITR, and there's a lot of, there's a perception amongst a lot of fans, a negative perception about him, and that's certainly not the experience that you had with him. That's not what happened, although it would not be fair, as you said, to go into the details about it at this time. To go back though to What Culture, something that I'm interested in. I wonder how much of this was always an issue. Like you say, you were not always a What Culture guy. You didn't have a character. And that kind of leads me into just to something I guess I'm interested in. I think some people who were ITR first in terms of finding you maybe are interested in this. And that's how you operated within the world of What Culture, given the bubble that a lot of the people who love that product are in, and the sort of the reputation that it carries elsewhere. Because you have always said, and I agree with you 100%, that one of the strengths of this show is its substance, and the fact that it's a space where you there's no need to necessarily gimmick conversations. It's just a case of, you know, it's just people who have opinions and want to talk about them and engage with people through the social media about it. But, you know, what culture carries a lot of associations, you know, accusations flung at it, such as that it's just straight up clickbait, which, you know, I think that's barely an accusation. That it's shallow, that it sort of parasites on wrestling, and that it's not particularly well respected. Now, that might be something that people who are listening to this because they're What Culture fans, and they might not like to hear that. They might not like to hear that, but I mean, you know, right, that there's a sizable audience and respected people within the wrestling world who think that What Culture's journalistic output is lacking credibility, to be polite about it. And I just wonder what that was like for you while you were there.
The tough thing is that originally there was two things. There was a YouTube channel and there was a website. And then there became three things. There was a YouTube channel and a website and a promotion. And the problem that I think they had, first of all, like, I think it's unfair to call What Culture clickbait stuff. I don't think they are. I think there's a lot of good stuff that they do as well. Like, the way I kind of tried to describe it is, like, we're almost like Frasier a little bit. Whereas they're friends. Like, they appeal to like a mass demographic, and like, because the stuff that like the Adams do and Jack does and Ross does, like, they've never claimed that they're journalists. They've never claimed that's what their thing is. Like, they're on screen personalities who do videos that, you know, people find funny or people are entertained by and all that sort of stuff. So I've always kind of found it's unfair that they would get judged on the kind of journalistic aspect of stuff, because that is not what they're trying to do. But the problem that you've got,
but that's not like something that is to fantasize that. I mean, you know that there is a sort of, from a certain corner of the sort of wrestling community, I guess there still is a sort of stigma against them.
There is, and the unfair thing about that stigma is that, like, you know, the Adams are like. The Adams are personalities on the channel. They don't own the company or anything, you know? And they get very unfairly sort of harassed on Twitter if something goes wrong, because people think it's their fault or they've done it, and they're just kind of like...
Yeah, they just work there.
Yeah, they're like the on-screen general manager, you know? Like, that's what they are. And you know, like, there was a thing a couple of months ago where there was a paid video put up on the YouTube channel on a Saturday afternoon. And the actual thinking behind it was pretty clever. And the idea was that, you know, there's What Culture Extra, which is a subscription service, and, like, maybe if people could sample stuff on there, they might want to subscribe. Like, it makes sense. So the idea was, you know, like, there'd be a video, and you could pay 99 cents and watch the video, and if you liked it, then you might be like, oh, well, I'll just pay the $6.99 a month to get the extra service. So that all makes sense. The problem was the video was put out there with no forewarning that was what was happening. So some people were like, What Culture are now going to make people pay for videos? And, like, that wasn't the case, but it was just badly communicated. And then the Adams had to, like, deal with this barrage of comments. And what I found really interesting about that was they had, like, they were being harassed on social media. And I don't blame the audience either, because they weren't given the information to know what was happening. But, like, what's interesting was I didn't get one tweet about it. Not one.
Right.
And, like,
well, there you go.
So, like, and I just mean, like, if people saw me as more of a What Culture guy, they would have done that. But I think ultimately where What Culture have tried to do stuff, like, you know, the What Culture magazine is great. Like, I've given a copy to several friends who liken it to, like, the old Power Slam magazines and stuff. The content is really great. But the problem you've got is you've got this great editorial journalistic content in the magazines. Then you've got on-screen personality stuff on a YouTube channel, but then
is where the majority of the fans come from.
Yes, and then you have a website where, like, the issue with the website really is that, you know, there's no real narrative or structure to the articles. It's just kind of like a free-for-all of opinion, which is fine. But, like, I think when you're doing all that together, and then on top of that, there's a wrestling promotion. It's difficult. It's difficult to have all of it remain intact. It's difficult for everybody to follow all of it the same way. It's difficult for all of it to... Like, you know, part of it's like, how can we make fun of WWE for doing a storyline when we have our own promotion that's had some
That's something I wanted to bring up next, actually, because first of all, just to kind of give you my...
I'm curious your take, because I've not heard your take on it.
So. Well, just my sort of take on what they do, I suppose. One, it's not for me, because I'm too old. Like, that's the way that I see it. I did wonder, like, why? I was like, why does this not appeal to me? And I realised it because, two things. One, the sort of general culture of around YouTubers, right? I'm just too old for that. I don't care about that. Like, I've got this empire attitude where I hate the idea of some, like 17-year-old nobody with a webcam can somehow drum up millions of hits talking about something that they don't necessarily have much experience on, but they can get this great following because of the democratic system of the internet, I suppose. That's like, I'm old enough now that that seems wrong to me. When I see, like, and that's just my prejudice. And so it's not me. I'm not into YouTube culture. I don't get it. I noticed that a lot of the people who followed you, I mean, I joked with Sandra all the time that it was all children, you know, like, you know, it was like 15-year-olds, because that's their generation. YouTubers are this generation's television stars. And just like our parents hated, you know, pop stars or whatever from our youth, because it wasn't like it was when, you know, my mum and dad hated any pop bands that I was into when I was like a really young child, because, you know, they don't even play their own instruments. They're not real musicians. And now I hate YouTubers because I'm old and I'm like, they can't even write. Like, they don't know how to construct an intelligent critical argument, blah, 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 blah. And, but I do think that, but I don't think that necessarily about what culture, because the level of talent involved in that is obviously quite high. But I think that what's interesting about it is that I think they're incredibly smart, because what they did with wrestling, people have been doing with movies for like nearly 10 years, where it's personality-based online video content. If you look at something, the earliest thing that I can think of, or video games even. So you've got guys like Angry Video Game Nerd, or the Nostalgia Critic for movies. So these guys who, you know, do personality comedy / criticism. And the fact that it took so long for anyone to do it for wrestling is madness. So credit to those guys for doing it, for wrestling and making such a big success out of it. But the thing that you were talking about there that I think is interesting is that I think what a lot of people have the problem with, and I don't know whether this is what your experience of it is, but this is the way that I see it, is that a lot of people didn't really like the success that they had and the fact that they did it very quickly. There was a lot of critics. I'm not going to name people. Okay, but I'm talking about people who are in the industry, people who write for other publications, etc., who have a dig when they can at the Walk Culture brand. And then when they decided to branch that out into the promotion, Walk Culture Pro Wrestling last year, that put a lot of noses out of joint for the same reason. And I think that, you know, there are some people that are still incredibly snidey about it. You know, all you have to do is, you know, if you take a minute to not look at the people who are tweeting you that are the fans about it, go follow the hashtag, and you're going to find a lot of people that are really bitchy about all that stuff. And I think it really comes down to the fact that they got very successful very quickly, and they made a lot of money. And in the, I'm not saying this is true, but in the eyes of some element of the sort of wrestling fan base in the UK, that promotion and the company in general online, they were able to achieve a lot of things quicker than people in the industry who were perceived to have worked harder to get to that. You know, you pick any sort of major indie promotion in the UK, they've been around for the best part of a decade, but it took, you know, Walk Culture Pro Wrestling like two shows to start booking guys like Cody Rhodes and Rey Mysterio. So, some people get snippy about it. And my question was what that was like to sort of be involved in something that did very well, sold a lot of tickets.
Does
very well. I'm just talking about past tense, because out of your life now. It does very well. It sells a lot of tickets. It actually gets pretty good reviews from people who take time to watch it. But you're sort of starting out on the back foot, where you've got a very sort of territorial fan base that there are as many people ready to step up and buy a ticket as there are people willing to step up and like have a pop because they think that you're treading on toes by running shows in certain areas or booking certain people. And mm-hmm. you know, what was that like to be there to take the leap into doing that?
I saw one question that somebody had sent to me, and it was like, what's the proudest thing you did at What Culture? And probably WCPW is the answer, to be honest, because I think they've done great shows. And I think that I've been to ICW shows, I've been to family friendly shows, and I genuinely think that WCPW do some of the best shows in the UK for what I like in wrestling, which is character and story and all that sort of stuff. So I've always felt there's an unfair rap on WCPW. The idea is, you know, you've got this massive YouTube channel that's got a million subscribers, and then you're going to make a wrestling promotion. So it makes sense to have the YouTube personalities involved. I don't ever think it got to the stage where the personalities were overshadowing the show. You know, they always were just kind of like the GM or the whatever. So I don't think it was... But I think that there's been really good work, and there's guys who like have been on the UK indie scene for years who are now... getting feet, like Martin Kirby, you know, who used to be partners with Chris Travis. Like, he's been wrestling for years, and he is now has got to like be in the main event of a sold out 3,000 seater building and go and wrestle in Orlando and all this stuff. And I'm like, I don't see how that's a bad thing that he gets to do that. Or Joe Hendry, who, let's be honest, was being overlooked by other promotions when he shouldn't have been. And he was able to come over and create a gimmick for himself that I think will one day propel him to WWE. Like, genuinely, I think that's what will happen. A guy like Prince Amin, who is the shittest gimmick you'll ever see in your life. Like, he is a crap Indian prince, but he's one of the most over people on the show. And now he brings a carpet out and does the magic carpet as the finisher. And everybody in the arena chats a whole new world. And it's great. Like, it's really fun. There's a young guy called Gabriel Kidd that's like 19 years old, and he just beat Cody Rhodes to become internet champion because Cody Rhodes got the belt, so Cody Rhodes would be able to drop it to a young guy, blah, 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 blah. So there's all this good stuff on the other side of it. I know there's people who are like, you know, bringing in Kurt Angle and all that sort of stuff. But Kurt Angle was brought in to have a match with Joe Hendry, and then when Kurt Angle came back, Joe Hendry turned heel on him. So to me, I don't see the negative in that. I think that for the most part, they used imports better than anybody else. Like, I was kind of part of the WCPW booking team, I guess. So maybe I'm too close, but I'm proud of the shows. I think they've been really good. There's some stuff that, like, I think there's a couple of things that I think have been dog shit. Like, but, you know, you're not going to hit the nail 100% of the time. But, you know, I've sat in meetings where I've argued for what I think all of us would want to see on shows. You know, like, I've sat and said, I think that's a terrible idea, or I think we should do this instead. So I'm proud of those shows, and I think it's been a really good promotion, and I'm proud of that one. And I think that the problem that it had was that it was, like you say, it was an offshoot of What Culture. So automatically the people who didn't like What Culture were going to dislike.
Yeah, because it is that. I mean, it's divisive. And I say that as somebody who doesn't really, like, other than occasionally watching some stuff that you were in, I didn't really watch it. So I don't want anybody thinking that I'm someone who doesn't, I don't like it. And it's kind of, we joked about kind of like, because you worked there as well as here, you know, whenever you would mention it before, and I'd be like, I don't even know what that is. Which is obviously not true. I just did that to make people laugh.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just not me. Like, that's just not the kind of thing, you know, that's not the kind of content that I would watch. So I'm not the best judge of it, but I do see an awful lot of people talking, and I see people that I know have gone to those shows and really enjoyed them, and I think that's fantastic. And then there's the people who just seem to have the knives out from the start until they find out they would get booked on the show, then they sort of lightened up a wee bit. But that's another story for another time, I suppose. British wrestling, it's a little bit bitchy on both sides of the guardrail, shall we say.
Yeah, no, and like I admit, like the thing that one of the things that kind of kept me there recently, just very quickly while I remember it, is What Culture did they'd got to a million subscribers, and I want to just say this is the Adams that pushed for this, just so everybody knows, the Adams wanted to do something for charity, and there was a 24-hour stream that raised 25 grand for mental health.
Very good.
We can say what we like about, like, I mean, listen, I'd rather be shat in my own face than hold the cardboard belt, but, you know, they do great things, and there's a lot of people who their day is made better by being able to watch those guys. There's people who their day is made better by listening to us, you know, so it's not, it's like you say, it's like, for example, I am not a Game of Thrones fan whatsoever. It's just not for me. Doesn't mean it's not good. Just means it's not for me. It doesn't tick my box.
Yeah. I think, and this is kind of an offshoot of our conversation, really, but I just think that sometimes people spend too much time in 2017, in recent years, just desperate to define themselves with the things that they don't like. Mm-hmm. And just, like, you know what, you've got a finite amount of time left on the earth, guys. Let's why don't you just enjoy what you enjoy? And you know what, if other people like it, then let them like it. You know, I thought there were some, when that promotion was announced, I thought there were some valid concerns, mostly about how do you, as you already mentioned, how do you reconcile a sort of, a YouTube channel that takes a sort of snidely cynical, humorous look at wrestling and then try to do your own thing without people being a sort of programmed to then automatically also view your product in the same way. You know, you kind of, that could have been difficult to deal with, but, you know, ended up not really being an issue at all, I don't think. Well, for some people, but I mean, only they need it.
The thing is, like there, I think that lists are very effective if they're done right. Like, I know some people are just adverse to lists. They think they're terrible. But, like, I remember there was a specific list that I didn't do, but somebody had to do. I can't remember who it was. It was, like, 10 out-of-shape wrestlers.
Oh.
And I remember just thinking, I just don't feel good about that.
Grubby, like, journalism.
Yeah, I just, like, and that, listen, that's not what the daily content was. But, like, and then I remember, like, when I'd sort of developed the relationship with WWE, and there was some concerns about the What Culture content a little bit. You know, like, I know Dolph Ziggler had tweeted out,
mm-hmm,
about he was, like, one of the most overrated wrestlers, and then he was, like, also, it was, like, something really negative and then something really positive, like, right beside each other. And you're, like, with that, like, that kind of, it takes away a little bit of credibility at that point, you know. But I think it's safe to say the focus has kind of gone off the website with the wrestling promotion, which is fine. But I think the sadness of that is that the website, when I was writing there, you know, in late 2015, I think there was a lot more attention paid to it. So I think it was better. But, like, I don't see anybody sharing the articles anymore. Anywhere. I can't remember the last time I saw somebody share a What Culture article, you know. And that's a shame. But it's like when you try and do 20 things at once, you can't pay as much attention to all the stuff. So my like, I know people ask, like, what was my job? Like, what did I do then? It's like, well, I worked in WCPW. I was, like, a talent liaison. I dealt with all the talent. I helped with, you know, getting guys over. Not as in, like, in the ring, but, like, bringing them across to the United Kingdom.
Yeah, Kenny had to put all those guys over. For them to have any credibility.
and that Kurt Angle, that kid was good, but when I got hold of him, he really propelled. Anyway, but the other thing that I would do is I would do podcasts, and I think that was the other thing, and this is, again, not What Culture's fault. Like, I said this to you last night when we were at the WWE show, like, because you'd mentioned something to me about substance, right? About, like, you know, content being substance. And it's like, I would do podcasts with, like, Jack or Ross or the Adams, and it's like their comfort level, their maximum comfort level is doing on-screen personality stuff. So it's hard for me to, so the idea of doing, like, daily podcasts, like, it's hard for me because I just don't think that engagement level is there with both of us on the same page. So it's tough to do that on a daily basis. And so there would always be these attempts at me trying to figure out podcasts and what podcasts I could do and who I could bring in, and then, you know, David McCutcheon was brought in and we know what happened there. But so
hey, I hope that wasn't a slight at my elite brother.
Right, okay. But the thing about it was that just it never really clicked with, like, you know, doing 5 days a week of podcasts and stuff, which I think was the plan. And you know, it just kind of, and then wrestle culture became, like, this once really fun thing to do became the bane of existence, because it wouldn't come out on a Friday and you'd get these tweets with like somebody, you know, circling the day the last one was out and just tweeting it to you and stuff. And I remember years ago when we did Inside the Ropes and like we weren't getting paid or anything. And I remember like I was stressing out one day that we hadn't put a podcast out on a Thursday night because that was the night it was supposed to go out. And it was a Friday afternoon. I was like, Robert, we need to get the podcast out today. I remember you just said, you were like, oh, I'm really sorry. They need to wait 12 more hours for their free entertainment. And I was like, yeah, no, you're right. You're right. Like, yeah.
I mean, I get it. Like, I appreciate that it comes from a good place when people send you those kind of messages. But also, you're not paying for it, buddy. So it's, you know, enjoy your free thing when you get it. But and
the guy who actually did the circle thing was like, his name on Twitter was like SDM Beast or whatever, and I genuinely thought it meant sodomize the beast. I thought he just wanted to, you know, do peculiar things to Brock Lesnar. So, and he's now like made that his Twitter handle and stuff. But yeah, anyway, I've tangented. So that, so yeah, what's next? Where are we going?
Well, I'm just going to run through some of these Twitter questions actually. So Ben at Chief of the Navy wants to know, Kenny, do you have any plans to work with any other wrestling companies / podcasts?
No podcasts because Inside the Ropes. Wrestling companies, I wouldn't be adverse to working with some wrestling companies, like doing some stuff there, but yeah, I wouldn't be adverse to it.
Cool. Jordan Henderson at Jordan Hendo 7 says, what sort of stuff can we look forward to now regarding Inside the Ropes, now that you've left What Culture? And, oh, I just realised that when that the acronym is WC, which is also toilet. And will there ever be video podcasts for Inside the Ropes?
Yeah, the plan is to start doing a ton of content on Inside the Ropes. Video content, audio. Robert and I have talked about doing a little talk show on camera. So, yeah, no, there'll be...
But I'm not going on camera until I get me some 100% ethically manufactured Hollywood Elite t-shirt.
Well, you might be waiting a couple of years, mate.
Money is money, baby.
Yeah, no, we'll do loads of stuff. We'll do podcasts. We'll have video stuff coming out. I would like to fix our website to be something else rather than just selling event tickets. That'd be nice. Got some irons in the fire, some meetings going on the next couple of days with some people to try and see what we can do. So yeah, this is the attempt to really make Inside the Ropes be a proper thing where like daily there's stuff for people, whether it's video or audio or website stuff.
Yes, and if that doesn't work, in 6 months' time, all four of us are going to be playing characters on YouTube.
Yep, pretty much. I'm not even gonna lie. Yeah.
We will totally sell our souls. This is something that's come up, and a number of people have asked this, but Anthony's his first year. Anthony Fitzpatrick. Could any What Culture guys make a guest appearance on an Inside the Ropes podcast? Not the first person to ask, Kenny. What is your thought?
I mean, I would happily have some of the guys on, but I don't know. Is that too much of a conflict, really, to ask them to come on and you know? You know, bump our numbers up. I don't know. I don't know if I would ask them because I would feel like it's putting them in a position. But yeah, I mean, maybe one day something.
I guess it would need to be, you know, if it was the right for the right reason, the right person for the right conversation. Mm-hmm. Not like just a cheap,
not just a
mad
culture orgy, just to have a. You know, have people on a podcast, but yeah, like I would happily love to have them on, but yeah, like you said, they just need to make sense about what the chat was, why they were there. I mean, like people have asked me about like, oh, will there be one more Wrestle Culture? No, because after the statement I put out and after doing this, I mean, are they really going to be like, come on the air one more time and just say what you want for an hour? Why would they? Like, that would be silly. Which means it might happen, but I don't know if they're going to keep Wrestle Culture going. I don't know. Maybe they will. I guess that's probably more to do with the Adams because they might just kind of say, you know, like people associate it with the three of us, so like, let's just not do it anymore. Or it might be let's just do it with the two of them. So the question about Wrestle Culture is probably more to be aimed at them than me. Now.
Right. What if they, like, recast you? Like they used to do in soap operas back in the day. Like, they'll just bring someone else.
Away, yeah.
Like, Pip, that was exactly what I was going to say, but I thought that's a bit niche.
Well, yeah, but the funniest thing about that was, so
they're just going to bring someone else in and be like, explain
the Pippa thing for people who maybe haven't watched the Australian soap opera from the 80s, Home and Away.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so in Britain in the late 80s, early 90s, for some reason, we all became very obsessed with the two Australian soap operas. One was called Neighbours. It was about people who lived next door to each other, therefore, neighbours. And the other one was called Home and Away. I'm not really sure why it was called that, but they all lived at Summer Bay, which was a sort of seaside town. And it just followed to various families. And there was a sort of a matriarch character in Home and Away called Pippa. She was a character that was she was a foster mum. So she fostered a lot of various characters who came in and out of the show. And at one point, sort of a couple of years into her tenure, they just recast her. It was a little bit like Faith Razor and Diesel, to bring it back to wrestling. Only people took it a lot better. And everyone just went, oh, well, I guess that's what she is now. That's what she looks like. And then there was new Pippa, there was old Pippa. And it's a trivia thing for people who remember that soap. It's still on now, but I don't think anybody watches it. Well, I don't even know if it's on in the UK. Is it on in the UK anymore?
No idea.
Must be on somewhere. So basically, yeah, my concern is that they might just bring somebody else in and they're like, this is new Kenny. Like new Coke. anyway, a couple more questions. We are kind of covering a lot of this stuff, but... Well, this is kind of interesting. I suppose this Noah Courtney's question ties in with some of the things that I was talking about, because I guess I'm sort of morbidly interested in fandoms, and therefore when fandoms act oddly, and I think that they tend to act quite oddly around things like wrestling, which is what I was talking about earlier on when I said that there was like a sort of fraction of the IWC who were very kind of snooty and weird about what culture originally and then when it had a promotion. And Noah asks, what culture became incredibly popular? ITR continues to gain popularity. Does anything with what culture make Kenny wary of gaining immense IWC popularity?
Not really. I was talking to our video guy, Corey, yesterday, and he was saying, oh, you know, we're on the way to 1 million subscribers. And I was like, that's not really a goal that I've got for the channel. I don't think you have that goal for the channel either, really. Like, I think the reason that what culture was just, like, it was at the right time, the right place, had the right people, and it just blew up, you know, it grew. Whereas I feel like the conversations we have, like you said, is, like, I feel like we're more aimed, and there will be exceptions to this, but we're more aimed at people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s who want to talk about wrestling and be a little bit analytical and have quite edgy banter that borders the line of taste. Whereas I think the what culture thing is very, like, it's very easy to digest, and it's very, you don't really need to think about it that much. It's just kind of, you go, you watch it, you have a laugh, and that's it. So I feel like their thing was always gonna get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, whereas, like, we've saw a very slow progression of people. Like, because I've always said, I think if people listen to an Inside the Ropes episode, they will enjoy it. But it's getting people to check it out. Because when we started in 2012, there wasn't really many podcasts.
No, we kind of suck it out a little bit. And what I think, and see, in terms of a goal, I've been thinking about this a lot more recently. Like, before I got involved in this, my background was in film criticism. And that's what I did at university. That's what I did working for a little while. And I've got very strong beliefs about what criticism is for. And to me, criticism is not consumer-led. It's not about, like, you know, this is 5 stars, you should go watch it. I would encourage people to watch things, but I'm not like a, you know, I'm not interested in telling you whether something is good so that you should buy it. I think that the purpose of criticism is to raise the quality of the conversation surrounding art. Like, that's the purpose of it. And I think if Inside the Ropes has done anything since 2012, it's that it's raised the quality of the conversation surrounding the art form of wrestling. And that's what I'm interested in. And I don't care whether there's 1 million people listening to it or there's 10 people listening to it. If the 10 people who are listening to it are really engaged in it and they listen to us talking about it, and yeah, sure, we'll make the odd tasteless joke or 10, and be really stupid and stuff, but I think that the important thing is that, you know, if at any point you've listened to us talk about wrestling and it's just it's made you think about something or change your opinion or wonder about something or ask the bigger questions about why we do the things that we don't have to do as a species, which is really what art is, then I think that that's the value in it, you know? It's not so much about...
That's my fear of getting... My fear of us getting really, really big is that it would be... Like, I feel like, as cheesy as it sounds, Inside the Ropes is a community of people. And, you know, we've got people from... And I'm going to miss out names here, but I'm just doing some just to clarify. So we've got people for years, like Hugo Campos and Adam Ferguson and Rhys Mortimer and William Patterson and Blair Buchanan, who've listened to us for fucking 5 years. And then there's people that have come along the way, like Sondra, who started listening to us and then became a contributor, David J. McCutcheon. And then
America coming over here, stealing our jobs.
but then through What Culture, so many people, you know, Di Owen, Karan, Mel, Dre, the Bex, you know, all these people that, Andrew Bartley, all these people who have, like, recently tweeted, stood in my head more, have come on board, and people seem engaged to talk
about. Yeah, and see those people, that's what I think, that, like, when you grow something, like, to grow something as massive as What Culture, right, that takes a hell of a talent and skill and hard work and dedication. But with something that huge, you know, you can't really control the quality of the engagement that you get. And I think that while Inside the Ropes might not have the, or might not ever have that size of people, I think it's been a wonderful filter in this kind of mad internet wrestling community. And the little Inside the Ropes filter has managed to capture a lot of the people passing through it and keep them. And some of the people you just said there, like Mel, etc. I've forgotten names already because I've got, like, total Friday.
Dre, the Bex, Lucy Nevins, like, all these people.
I was drinking last night. Yeah, our little filter and the crazy, you know, shit shoot of the internet wrestling community has managed to pick up a lot of diamonds that have stuck around and listened. That's cool, you know.
Yeah, no, that's great. And what I was going to say is, because when we started doing the podcast in 2012, like, there wasn't really any other podcast, whether it be wrestling or fans. But the problem now that we face is that there are so many wrestler podcasts, number one. And then on top of that, there are so many fan podcasts. So how do people who haven't listened to us know that our one's worth checking out?
Yeah, you just have to have, as Bruno Sammartino once said, tune in for a very interesting conversation.
He did say that.
Because that's all it's got. We're fans, but we're just not a bunch of, like, goofballs that are just sitting around, I fucking hate John Cena! We're not insiders either.
But
so
we also come at it from a point of, okay, so we hate John Cena. Why do we hate John Cena? What do we dislike? Where is the disengagement? Like, and then when you get into that, you kind of go, right, okay, now it's interesting. You know, like, rather than it just kind of being like, you shout, and then that's the end of it. So, and it's, again, that's just, it's not that What Culture couldn't do that, it's just that's not what the people that were hired and the people that work there are there to do, you know? It's like having a joiner turn up to work the tills at Asda. It's not what he's there to do. So it's like, it's two different things, like, my job is to just talk about wrestling, and hopefully it's funny, and hopefully it's informative, or it makes people think, or whatever.
Can we do a couple more questions, though, before we talk about other stuff? Rob G, at Jessa the Rogue. Oh, dear.
Right.
How does it feel walking away from the opportunity to be the What Culture Heavyweight Champion?
Wow. I won't lie to you, Rob. It would have been a prestigious honour to hold that. But no, it is. You know, there are times you kind of go, should I just put the cardboard belt on to make people laugh? And then you can go, like, no, it's just never something I really wanted to do. But I don't think that I could do what. I think one of the strengths of What Culture was, like, you know, like, I think Ross is one of the funniest guys I've ever met in my life. He does those what the fuck moments, you know, he's a proper Geordie, he's like a 23-year-old guy with, like, the mind of a 79-year-old old man who, you know, just drinks ale all the time, and, like, he's just really funny. But I could never do what he does. I couldn't, no matter if I tried, or I could never do it, but he couldn't do what I do. And I couldn't do what Adam Blompey does. Adam Blompey couldn't do what I do. So everybody had their own thing that they did. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, was really good and worked really well. And I did not want to be the What Culture Heavyweight Champion.
Okay, you may get, this is from Dan Bennett, who is at Dan Bennett. Simple. That's how you do it.
Yeah, you
be like Dan.
Don't complicate things, Dan. Just say it as it is.
I like it. You make sly digs at What Culture on your ITR podcast. Interested to know if they knew that you did that. You see, that was also, to be fair.
You egged me on.
Well, no. What I was going to say was, I think we've all done it. I've done it. Sandra's done it. I think David's probably done it as well.
He's more of a reason to do it than anything.
He does have more of a reason to do it. But I think that's all kind of like a sign that, as you say, you were never really one of their guys. Because if I thought that you were 100% committed to that, it's kind of like, you know, if your friend starts going out, you know, dating a new person or whatever, and they're a bit like odd about it, then maybe you'll sort of get involved in them making like jokes and stuff. Mm-hmm. But if they're like, I pure love this person, I'm going to marry them, then you just don't say anything. So I don't think any of us would have sort of made the jokes if you kind of hadn't been a bit like, oh, sometimes at some of the things that you were doing or had to deal with. So I think that was like, for anybody that ever caught any of that, I think that was a sign that something like this was maybe always going to happen.
Yeah, no, and the digs were just kind of, you know, what's the word? Like, you know, maybe how I felt dialed up to 100. I mean, it was just a joke.
Yeah.
There was a hint of truth in it, but... Like, because the thing is, like, I do want to say, like, I really am trying to not be too negative. I hope that's coming across. And it's not that I think I should be more negative, but like What Culture have given me a lot of great opportunities. Like, I got to go and do a tour around Kentucky and Florida with Jim Cornette. That's an experience that I will remember, like, when I'm an old man, and I'll have that to go back to. I have got to interview so many big names. I've got to do a tour with Eric Bischoff. I got to bring Bret Hart as a surprise guest at a Jim Cornette, Jim Ross show that would have been possible if the WCPW show wasn't the next day. Got to grow inside the ropes because, you know, like yesterday, through the hundreds of tweets that were coming through, and I mean that because I did not expect that many to be there, but like every second or third one was like, I'm so glad I found Inside the Ropes, though. I'm so glad I found Inside the Ropes. And I did not expect that to be the case. Thrilled that it is, but I didn't expect it. So
yeah.
I'm always going to be grateful for the stuff that I did, but I will always absolutely rip the stuff that I didn't like.
Of course. And I'll just sort of round up this part of the podcast conversation. Obviously, again, if you want like Kenny's full self-indulgent diatribe, then you can go to
self-indulgent diatribe. It is very self-indulgent, but you know, like I said, like the real reason I did that was because I thought, right, if I tweet out that I've left, I mean, there's always a way to go back, and I thought I have to do something that really enforces that I can't go back.
Okay.
So I thought if I do that, I won't be able to go back. So
I wanted to sort of round. Well, obviously, you get the final word here, and I've got a question from a listener to help you do that. But beforehand, I just want to say a couple of things about it. I think that from seeing you yesterday, you seemed genuinely happy about the decision. So I think that if there's anybody that's a bit like weird about it or anything, that they should know that you seemed like visibly happy that you'd done that.
First words that I said to you when I saw you?
I think it was, I'm free. I'm free! So it's definitely a positive. But I just think that it is important to acknowledge that, although we sort of had a conversation about, you know, your values versus perhaps what their values was in terms of content, and also the fact that, you know, as much as many, many people love what they do, there are people that don't like it, and what that was like to sort of be in the middle of all that kind of stuff when you yourself are not always 100% sure about what they were doing. But I think it's an important thing to sort of say, I guess, is that too cheesy? No, I don't think so. I think that, if anything, it's to say thank you to you from me, and I think I can also speak to Sandra and David as well, because the fact is that, yeah, okay, maybe the experience wasn't everything you thought it was going to be, and it was going to be very stressful, but you did do a lot for this show while you were there, when there were, you know, there were definitely times where you could have just sort of, you know, packed this up and gone over there all the time. You could have really, and you didn't do that. And now we have a lot more people coming over here because of that. So I think that as much as maybe people think that this is going to be some kind of burial, as David said, and that it's going to be like something particularly negative, I think that all the outcomes are positive. You made some decent money. you got a lot of contact. You made some good content. And I think one of the things that you seem to be happy about, and that I think everybody else would be happy about, was is that you brought a lot more people over to listen to this show. So I think that it was a job well done.
I can't remember the last time you said anything nice about me, so I'm just floored. no, thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And I enjoyed it. I think at the end of the day, I'm sure, I don't want to say too much, but one of the factors that became too much for me was that being at WCPW, I was having to be the bearer of delivering stupid decisions to people that were not my decisions. And that was to wrestlers and to fans and to other people. And I couldn't do that anymore. I just felt like I couldn't. I was too tired and overworked fighting for stuff that is not my thing to fight, really. And I just think that if certain people there need that to be what somebody needs to do, I wasn't paid enough to do it. And also, like, people need to remember that anything that I do that involves a wrestler, for example, that ends up reflecting on me and what I want to do in the future with Inside the Ropes and different things. So, like, it's not just a case of, like, me delivering a piece of news. It's just like, oh, this is from what culture? You know, it's the face of it is me. And that's really difficult. So, but overall, yeah, I had a really positive experience there. And I think it's important to leave somewhere where you still have all the good memories of it. And all the What Culture guys have been very kind in tweeting out about it. But the main thing that I'm proud of is the fact that we have doubled our listenership at Inside the Ropes through me being there.
I know, that means that half the people listening don't know who I am.
Oh, that's the Robert guy, okay. And you know, like, it means now that, like, we've been able to start a Patreon page, we've been able to deliver, all of us getting a little bit of kickback from that we can spend a little bit of time on it. That's great. Because I always remember, like, I'm going to take you inside the ropes a little bit. I remember we did a show, I won't say which one, we did a show a couple of years ago, and it didn't make any money.
At all, which right? One? It could have been one of a couple.
It's one of two, but one of them was Sonny. Who the fuck are we lying? But there was another one, and we didn't make any money. And I remember after the show was really good, and I remember after it, Robert was really disappointed about it. And I remember, like, we had this conversation. And I was like, you know, but we did good stuff, and, you know, like, we made the effort, and even though we didn't fiscally come out of it like that, the way we wanted to, like, we did good work, and that's something to be proud of. And you just couldn't get past the failure of not being able to kind of break even or whatever. And I remember you just said, I can't do this. You're not in it to make money, but you can't do this just at a loss, and it's really sort of demoralizing to do. So I'm just glad that we have been able to get to a point where, you know, now if you need to sit down and do a SummerSlam review on Patreon, you actually get a little bit of something for doing that. And that's something that I've wanted to help deliver for you for a while, so I'm glad that that can start happening.
Yeah, well, it's not, it's like you say, like, I think that the work speaks for itself. It ultimately has to be. I mean, I wouldn't have done it for as long as I have with, you know, various breaks.
Extended breaks.
Well, one very extended break, but
maybe you lost your smile.
Yeah, whatever. But it wouldn't have. You wouldn't do it for that long if you were just in it for the money, which I'm absolutely not. Folks, I didn't get into podcasting for the money. My other career is a teacher, so you can tell I'm definitely not money orientated. If I wanted to work really hard for nothing, I would have just stuck with the podcast. I didn't need to make two careers out of working really hard for very little financial gain. But I just always thought, especially with the effort of the show, is the number of people that ended up becoming involved and things like that. Like, you know, it wasn't about the money validated it. It was just like, you know, I always felt like people must think that we're doing really well, but if you're secretly not doing well, there'd be something like, oh, but we doesn't actually make money. Like, it's not successful. And if you're doing something where money's involved and you're not turning a profit, then, you know, are you just like a failure because you're not achieving that? And, well, that doesn't happen anymore, so it's fine.
So that's pretty much it. We're not really going to talk about it again. Thanks to everybody who's tweeted and sent support, whether it's wrestlers or people who listen to the podcast or people that know me. And it's I genuinely didn't expect that many people to care. So I appreciate it very much.
Now, something has happened.
Oh, you mean today? Okay.
Something has happened, bro.
Ugh.
Something's going on, bro. There's a guy who's talking about wrestling. It's pretty gay. You, Kenneth McIntosh, Manny McIntosh, you have been castrated by that Mark Castrator himself, the king of sleaze style. Vince Russo played a clip of you getting very angry about Jinder Mahal, which is interesting. I don't think we've had the conversation about castrating the Mark. Vince Russo's latest dying attempt at remaining relevant in the world of professional wrestling. But what did you say? What clip did he use?
So I've not listened to it. Because okay. I was going to, and then I realised if I listen to it, I'll become too involved. And I'll end up giving him what he wants. So I'm not going to do it. But I've heard from enough people that, like, there's no way that the amount of people would get in touch with me. Like, for example, the Irish promoter for Jericho today was like, oh, I'm just booking your flights for June for Jericho. Your last name is Mark, right? And I was like, right, okay, this is what it's become. Basically, Vince Russo has decided to play a clip of me as part of his Castrating the Marks episode about me talking about Jinder Mahal. The thing is, do I feel the way about Jinder Mahal that I've said? Yes, I do. Do I ham it up for effect? Yes, I do. But the difference is that my satirical attempt to cover Jinder Mahal is completely different from killing two wrestling companies and booking yourself as the world champion and making fun of a guy's Bell's palsy, and through continuous attempts over 15 years to always stereotype minorities at any opportunity, and to have a severe inherent problem with homosexuals. So I might be a mark, but Vince Russo is a piece of shit. So I'm not going to get involved with him. But the thing is, I'm adult enough that I can separate him being a bit of a dick about me to everything else. I still think what he did in WWF was good, and I enjoyed some of the stuff he did. I still love Deadly Game, the tournament. So it's not going to like change my opinion of some of the stuff he's done. It's just confirmed that he is a bit of an idiot, you know? And like,
it's just really sad.
And it's like, I'm almost more like, I almost more take it as a compliment. I'm like, you want to play a clip of me talking about somebody to like, I mean,
thanks for listening.
Yeah, like really, like me? I mean, I am...
You're turning into Sally Field.
I just don't get it. I don't get why. Where did he get the clip of me? Who showed it to him? I think what it comes down to is I have a real issue. I hate the word mark. I really dislike it as a word, because I feel like it's very derogatory to call anybody a mark. Like, it's... And I don't like the way it's used. I don't like how... Like, I hate the term, like, smart marks and all that. It's just not language that I like to use. So the fact that that's the word he's calling me is probably not helping. That's what he's doing. But I guess, like, I went on his Twitter, and I think as of right now he's not blocked me yet. So, but then I've not even bothered, like, mentioning him, because I don't want to really give him the press. I've not, like, tagged him or anything. But he's got double the Twitter followers that I have, right? But what's interesting about that is I'm a nobody from Scotland that interviews wrestlers sometimes. I'm very aware of my position in the world. Very aware. No, you know, you did take, I will take the piss out of all the kind of jokey internet celebrity stuff, right? Like, I'm happy to joke about it. Like, I get it ripped out of me all the time by friends. But Vince Russo is a guy who, by all accounts, the amount of work that he's put into wrestling should have a very big audience. But instead, he has this audience of, you know, 40,000 whatever Twitter followers who, like you said the other week, he wants to have this bubble of agreement for himself. And that's fine if that's what you want to do, but I just think that that's, it leads to poor programming. His co-host, this Jeff Lane guy.
Oh, God, I followed him on Twitter for a while. What an asshole.
Yeah, he just seems a bit like, you know, he's a Make America Great Again kind of guy. And then, like, of all the people, it's like, okay, so you can involve anyone from wrestling that you want to talk about it. And your first choice is Disco fucking Inferno? Like, I don't know what I... There's nothing I can really say about Vince Russo.
Yeah, he's like, Disco Inferno is, what, like, AOL dial-up Fandango? But not as good.
And like
old 90s Fandango. I don't really get that
and
either.
But then
the people that he works with are just like his ass-kissing pals from back in the day, you know? It's not really... Yeah.
Like, because I don't really know, like, whenever Cornette and I are together, like, I always try and kind of, not necessarily defend Russo, but I always kind of, like, I think that you should always be able to, if you can, separate your disagreements with someone from, like, saying that the complete entirety of their person is horrible. Like, you should be able to separate it if you can. Jim Cornette cannot separate that about Vince Russo, which is fine.
No.
But, like, the only, like, so a couple of people had said to me, you know, don't rise to him because he just wants the attention.
No, don't lower yourself. The appropriate expression.
The only tweet that I could send out that I thought just accurately summed up in less than 140 characters how I feel, I said, the WWE network is great. Lots of good content. I specifically enjoy the September 2009 show where Vince Russo booked himself as WCW champion.
Do you want me to... You know how sometimes I have thoughts and I go, that could alienate some people, I better not say them?
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's like... So basically, like, the whole point of Russo's gig, right, the whole Disco Straight in the Marks thing is it's meant to be pointing out people who are getting too involved in something that's fake, right?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't Vince Russo a Christian? Because I tell you what, right? You know, I tell you what, bro. There's nothing more carny than organized religion, my friend. If you think you're going to meet the angel Gabriel at the pearly gates when you croak Vince Russo, then you're a bigger mark than anyone that gets angry about Jinder Mahal. Like, what the fuck, man? Wrestling fans are such marks. Excuse me while I go in the... pray or whatever, but he's not even really a Christian, is he? He's just one of those ones that did a lot of bad shit and felt the need that the only way I can get away with this is if I say that I've turned and become religious now.
Found the Lord.
But, yeah, honestly.
It genuinely does tickle me, like, more than anything else, how low on the totem pole do you have to get that your version of getting attention is to play a clip from me talking about Jinder Mahal?
I know.
I mean, I just don't get it. I don't understand.
Okay, he's just an idiot, man. He's just an idiot.
But then again, I mean, you know, we like Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, so we're pure gay.
Totally gay, bro. We're totally gay.
I bet you any money that all Vince Russo really wants in his life is a hand job from a man. like
oh Jesus, that's probably why he turned into religion.
Yeah, more of a chance of getting it there.
I've heard a lot about those priests, bro. Ah, you're a little too old for them. Sorry, mate. Oh Jesus, literally. Oh,
but not like, honestly, it does make me laugh at it. And I've not listened to it because, like, I can laugh about it now, but if I listen to it, like, apparently it makes fun of my accent as well. So,
whoa! Vince Russo. is making fun of somebody's accent.
Yeah, apparently so. So
wow.
But yeah, I've got a lot going on, Robert. I don't have time to have a feud with Vince Russo.
It's okay. I'll step in.
Feel free.
Yeah, I'm gonna see how many tweets telling him that he's a mark for Jesus it takes to get me to the level of being blocked.
But my favourite thing is, like, I've not done it yet, but I'm going to message Cornette and tell him, and I bet he's just going to be so happy. He'll be like, see? I told you!
He's an asshole!
I can imagine now.
No, I don't even know. I mean, the thing is, God, he just seems like a pure sleazebag.
Yeah. I mean, like, I know that, I mean, here, I'm not a Christian person. Like, I remember when I was a kid, and I'm not, you know, if you're a Christian, like, more power to you, that's fine. You know, I like wrestling, so I can't blame you for liking anything. But, like, I remember when I was a kid, I used to have to go to church every Sunday because my gran loved going to church, and I hated it, and I always used to have to miss Wrestling Challenge and All-American Wrestling and Sky One, so I was even more raging about it. And I remember going
over to... Don't you want to talk to Godson? And it's like, I do. He wears red and yellow, and he's on Wrestling Challenge every Sunday morning.
He just won the title at WrestleMania 9. Anyway, unbeknownst to me, he wouldn't be back on TV. But, like, when I was a kid, I remember just being kind of annoyed by it, because it just used to kind of, like, take up time in my day that I didn't really... And I never really understood, and again, this is just my perspective, I never really understood going to a place to talk about the past. I'd rather just go and live.
Like, don't you go to WrestleMania every year? Isn't that just going to a place to talk about the past?
Fuck you.
From
my memories of being a Christian, I don't remember it as being you go to church and then you come home and you go on a radio show to make fun of people for liking something that makes them happy. Which is what he seemed to do by... Like, the thing is, the best part of the whole thing was that, because somebody had tweeted me saying, Vince Russo called you at his podcast, and I was like, okay. And then they sent me like a link to it, but it was like an iTunes link, so it basically just brought up all of his podcasts.
Right.
And I said, and I had to ask which one I was on, because there's today's or yesterday's. And I want to give you the full titles here, because I don't want to get this wrong at all, because that would be bad. So I had to say, which episode am I on? Am I on castrating the marks or being transgender in professional wrestling?
Oh, God. I tell you what, there is nothing I want to listen to less than Vince Russo's thoughts on being transgender in professional wrestling. I can only imagine, unless the old, maybe like Donald Trump.
You've either got a dick or a vagina, bro. One of the two. Yeah. Like, you can imagine. You can imagine the verbiage he's got, you know?
Honestly, maybe like, yeah. Donald Trump's Guide to Mexican Relations might be the only podcast I'm less interested in hearing than Vince Russo trying to talk about the transgender experience. My God.
It's like asking the Pope about S&M. What's, like, how would he know?
Well,
I mean, that's the wrong example. Anyway.
That Pope's got a cheeky wink in his eye, I think you mean. Anyway, do you want to talk about House of Potters quickly before we finish this?
Well, also, first of all, we were at the WWE live show last night in Glasgow.
Oh, yeah.
We saw... I love that Robert can sound so despondent about a free ticket.
Well, no, I had a really fun time, but...
We just get pissed, didn't we?
We drank and we just sat chatting and sort of... Oh, is there an entrance?
When an entrance came on, we stood up.
Yeah, we were really into the entrances, and then the matches were on, and... Well, there was a lot of, like... Because we had the floor seats, there was lots of kids who were all kind of standing up because they couldn't see because the ring was at a funny height, and so, you know, we were just kind of like, ah, well, we'll just...
Yeah, because if we were sitting down, you couldn't see what was going on in the ring.
Yeah, but we also didn't want to stand up because there was kids behind us, so...
Can you explain to the lovely listeners of Inside the Ropes, and I want to bear in mind that what Robert argued about 20 minutes ago was that one of the things he likes about Inside the Ropes is the art and, you know, the critiquing of the art. But you did
It's raising the level of critical engagement around the art of professional wrestling.
Right, that's what you said. So please indulge me by repeating what you said to me about the middle-aged woman outside in the Roman Reigns t-shirt, please.
Oh, right. Well, I also said that sometimes I like to say silly things, such as, Kenny, you should have seen the middle-aged woman outside wearing the Roman Reigns t-shirt. She was frothing at the flaps, and I was just like, Henny, he's not even here! Honestly.
Frothing at the flaps.
Frothing at the flaps. She was so excited, and fair play to her. I mean, why wouldn't you be? But she was getting her photo taken, and she was just like, believe!
Oh, God.
Believe that! And I was just like, oh, no, he's not even here! And I didn't know whether they would even know that, because it's funny to me that there's still some people that they just buy the ticket and just you hear them when they're leaving, they're like, where was John Cena? And I'm always like, oh, man, that sucks. That they just don't get that you can look up who's going to be there, or it's different touring brands. Just saw some funny looking Japanese guy.
We were treated at the opening match was a 5-way for the SmackDown Women's Championship. We didn't have any poppers for Naomi's entrance, but we did get through it.
Yeah, that was fun.
Can you talk about your favourite match of the show that you were going on about for the rest of the night was the 6-man tag?
Oh my God. Sin Cara and Breezango versus Aiden English and The Ascension. Oh, what a lot of jobby that was. There wasn't really much going on there, was there? Like, there's not really much you can say about that. I mean, Breezango are fun, but...
Although Aiden English, by the end, had kind of won us over because he was so shite.
Yeah, I do quite like the singing thing. It is kind of funny. And then when he stayed in the ring because he couldn't believe that he'd lost the 6-man tag. So then he challenged somebody else in the back. And Mojo Rawley got the easiest payday of his career, where he just had to run in and basically pin Aiden English in about 30 seconds. All the while not stopping moving around like a, you know, ADHD rattled child. And I really just don't like that man. I just don't like him.
What would you say is the key fundamental that you don't like him for?
Well, okay, being someone who lives in Glasgow, there's nothing else worse than being at a bus stop with a junkie. And for anyone that doesn't know, I just basically mean someone who's like mad on drugs. And you're at the bus stop and you're like, I wish this bus would get here. And they're all like crazed and mad and wild and crazy eyed and jittering about and bugging you and asking you for 20p and stuff. And that's just Mojo Rawley. He's just annoying. He won't leave you alone. He's always doing something.
Mojo Rawley is the junkie at a bus stop.
Yeah, it's just annoying. Just calm down. Just go take a seat. Just have a sit down. You know, maybe one or two less Red Bulls. You know, stop acting like a 5-year-old that's just had a handful of blue Smarties. It's really annoying. Ugh. What else was there?
We also had the UK 6-man thing with Tyler, Trent and Wolfgang against Pete Dunne, T-Bone and Joseph Connors. We kind of missed a lot of that.
Yes, because we were at the bar.
But we did get to see the finish where Wolfgang got the win, so that was good.
Big win. In Glasgow for the big W.
There was a great eye roll from Robert when he realised that Eric Rowan was coming out to his banjo music.
Oh, yeah. He's awful.
Was it the 6-man tag or the Harper-Rowan match where you were like, this is Sondra's dream?
No, it was the 6-man tag because you said something like, who could possibly like this? And I was like, Breezango, The Ascension, Aiden English, Sondra is like... loving this right now. If you see her, like, these are like all her guys. So she would love it. Oh no, I think what I actually said to you was that she might not love it because Sondra would say something like, I can't believe Aiden English is teaming up with The Ascension because on episode 35 of original NXT, The Ascension beat him up or something. Like, she would have that crazy institutional knowledge of NXT that she has to tell you why it doesn't make any sense that this is happening in a random house show in Glasgow.
And he faced Luke, Rowan faced Luke Harper, but the big part of the night for you was you got to see Shinsuke Nakamura.
I got to see Shinsuke Nakamura for the very first time, which was exciting. The entrance is great. He is just as charismatic and wonderful as you would imagine. We got told a little story about what he gets up to backstage before he goes out, and it sounds Shinsuke perfect. It sounds exactly like what I imagine the artist known as Shinsuke Nakamura would be like. So that was good fun. We didn't really pay much attention to the match, though, did we?
Nah, we were still kind of getting pissed, to be honest.
Yeah, we're getting pretty getting our drink on. The best match of the night was for me anyway was Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, just because they are, I think I said to you, they are great house show wrestlers because they wrestle for the people who are in the very back row in terms of, you know, facial expressions, gestures, their vocals, all that kind of stuff. You know, they go big to get the whole crowd involved, and it was arguably the most involved the crowd were.
Yeah, no, it was definitely the best match of the night, and because it's funny, because I'd went to get, this was when I went to get the last drink of the night, because Robert had said, you know, I think the bar's closing, and then the bar had closed, but like the food bit was still open, so they had, I don't know why I'm getting into so much detail, but they still had like Bulmer's cider, which is just fizzy piss, but you know, so it's all we've got left. So we get a couple of them, and I come back, and like Robert's first thing was like, these two are such good house show performers.
And it was, I don't mean it in a detrimental way, though.
No, you meant it as, and then as, it was kind of the one match of the show that we actually kind of stopped talking and paid attention to.
Yeah.
Which I think was the kind of test of, like, even when you've had a drink in you and you're kind of having a good time with your friend, like, you still, it's like, all right, we need to kind of sharp now because this is actually really good stuff. And, it was great. But the main event, three-way style, for the WWE Championship, Randy Orton defends against AJ Styles and
the Maharaja,
Jinder Mahal. So I found one of the ways to get through was just to shout Maharaja at various points.
You just kept shouting Maharaja, and my fear is that are we beginning to ironically like Jinder Mahal?
That is my fear.
He's kind of rubbish, but my favorite thing is that his kind of wonky accent, like sometimes he goes really strong on the kind of Indian sort of stereotypical accent, and just like, what? Like, it's just really strange. It's really odd. I get it, but I also don't get it.
Yeah, well, I mean, because we were talking about it, it's like, you know, are they going to give him the title? And I feel like now I have to kind of put all my gender opinions just down to the bare minimum in case bro over there has an issue with it, but nah, fuck him. Jinder fucking Mahal in the main event. It was fine, but like, there was nothing in the match where Jinder and Randy would do anything that you went, oh, this is going to be, I can't wait to see this at Backlash, you know?
Oh, basically, it was, you know, Randy Orton, so boring, the human yawn. Jinder Mahal, who's just not really ready for this. And then AJ Styles just basically, you know, saving the day. Just doing everything he can to keep everybody interested. I mean, he was the star in the match, I think. I think he got a huge reaction from the crowd. They loved him.
Yeah, they did. They really loved AJ. And also, you can go to youtube.com/InsideTheRopes. We started putting up clips with AJ, him talking about Undertaker's retirement, rumours of him going to Raw in the shake-up, and his reaction to a pay-per-view being called Great Balls of Fire, where he genuinely didn't know that was the thing.
Goodness gracious.
Which, okay. But it was a fun night. Like, I don't know if it's I think if you're going as a punter sort of thing, and you're, I don't know if I would be like, you know, but like, I wouldn't ever say, you know, pay the 100 quid ticket to be front row or anything. But you know, it's a decent night out.
Yeah, it's a fun night out. But I think that the issue I have with the kind of house shows now is that I kind of need some stakes.
I mean, we had. Three championship matches. What do you? Four. We also had.
Are you about to say what more do you want, Robert? We had all those titles on the line.
We had the Usos against American Alpha and the Colognes.
Oh yeah. The Colognes.
So talk to me about, because I talked about it with David on Patreon, but talk to me about the House of Horrors.
Okay. First of all, I really liked Payback. I thought it was a good show. Thought it was a really good show. So I'm not one of these people who sort of can't see past one thing they didn't like and end up trashing the whole thing, which I think some people did. But I just think it really exposed an awful lot about what WWE don't get. And I guess, you know, looking historically, the last couple of years, we've seen something like Lucha Underground, okay, emerge and, well, kind of extinguish a little bit. You know, no one's really talking about that anymore. But one of the things people really liked about it was its sort of genre-bending approach to pro wrestling. And we have, in the last couple of years, you know, we've been living in an era of a number of people wanting to push what wrestling is, what it can be artistically. So whether it's Lucha Underground doing a sort of comic book style world and narrative story, you've got the Hardys with the Final Deletion, which is effectively a sort of trashy Mystery Science Theater type gig. You've got guys making money on the indies like Joey Ryan, who are sort of doing pretty much out and out comedy wrestling. And then you've got, you know, you guys from Chikara, like Mike Quackenbush, who had that speech, that video that went viral where he was talking about, you know, wrestling can be this, that, and the next thing. And I agree with all those things. They can be. But the problem is about tone. The problem is about tone. And a lot of those things I just mentioned had their critics, you know. A lot of people hated the Final Deletion. A lot of people don't like Lucha Underground. A lot of people wouldn't really get into Chikara because it's not their style of wrestling. And a lot of people, including yourself, were quite critical of what Joey Ryan was doing. So these things are always quite divisive. So it should come as no surprise that some people loved the House of Horrors and some people didn't. But my problem with the House of Horrors is not that it didn't work. It's that it could have if they were just smarter about it. And they just weren't. And the thing was, is the fact that it took them so long to really establish what it was spoke volumes about, you know, their kind of flippy floppy approach to this. And I just think that it just doesn't sit well to me. And the thing is, they used to be able to do stuff like this. So just like talking you through it, when it starts, I was really into it. There was a point where, like, the match before it, I turned to my friend Dave and I just said, I really can't wait for this match to be over because I'm so down for this House of Horrors thing because I think it could be really good. And it just didn't really work. Like, it started off, I was like, okay, this could be quite good. There was the kind of Phantom Tractor and the lights going off and on again and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, this could be interesting. And then they just proceeded to have a very sort of low impact, almost demure fight that wasn't even particularly well put together in what looked like a crack den. And yeah, okay, there was a room with some spooky dolls. And at one point, like, Bray's arm comes through the wall and grabs Randy Orton, which could have been great. But your camera blocking is not great when you can see Bray through the hole, like, reaching his arm back through and just going for a wee wander around the corner, you know, to meet Randy next. You're kind of like, oh, that's kind of killed it a wee bit. It's like that bit in Scream where they make... It's like that bit in Scary Movie where they make fun of Scream with the sort of the classic thing where, you know, your good guy looks out the window and they sees the scary horror character in the garden and then they double take and look back and he's suddenly gone. And Scary Movie did that joke about where the camera lingers with the bad guy and you see him, like, running over really, really quickly so that when the person looks back, they're not there anymore. And that's what it kind of gave me the vibe of. And the thing is you know, and it didn't work tonally for me because I just kind of watched it going, what? Like, you know, the Final Deletion worked in TNA because it wasn't taken very seriously. It was a joke. Like, it was meant to just be pure entertainment. That's why that worked. They understood the tone. It was presented as something fun and jokey, and you weren't meant to take it very seriously. But WWE presented this. It presented it too seriously. And the thing is, I just don't think it worked. I know they wanted to do this on-site stuff because this is the trend. You know, they want to try and see if they can do it. They tried it with the New Day visit in the compound. It didn't work then either because their show just doesn't really work it that way anymore. And they used to be able to do stuff like this. You know, they did, like, you know, the Boiler Room Brawl, for example, or anything involving The Undertaker during his career, where he would do things. You know, he would throw firebombs and lightning at Kane, and he would fight Mankind in the boiler, or, you know, Paul Bearer would lift the lid off the urn and all the light would shine out and spray around the arena and all that kind of stuff. And it's total bunkum, right? But it totally worked because you built the rest of the show to sort of allow that sort of thing to occur. And I was just disappointed by the House of Horrors because it didn't go all in. Like, I wanted Randy Orton to go into a room and there'd be, like, a little kid like going, hello, Randy, and all this kind of stuff. Like, just go full on mental scary and have like somebody chasing them around and what have you, and just making it really creepy. And, you know, but I just didn't think it went far enough. And then they didn't know how to wedge it into the show, because it came back and it comes back and the announcers are sitting there, and God bless them for trying to make this work. But they're just kind of like, well, we'll get more updates from the House of Horrors in a second, but now we need to talk about Seth Rollins' knee injury. And it was so jarring to me to cut from, you know, the spooky house of horrors to then like this very realistically built up thing with Joe and Seth Rollins based around an ankle and knee injury. And I was just like, whoa, whoa, like you ground the gears too quick between genres here. And I just think that it's not that people were like, WWE, never try stuff like this again. And I'm going, I disagree. Don't, because God knows you need to do something to save Bray Wyatt, because honestly, Jesus, do not care. I feel terrible to say it, but I just don't care about him anymore. but finally, just to sort of, I know because I've been talking for a long time, but I just think that, I just don't think they're good enough at that kind of thing anymore to make it work. And then when they came back to the ring, and it didn't really explain. And then even the stuff like, again, people kind of credited it's filming, and yeah, it did look good, but one, there was that shot where you could see Bray like dilly-dallying around through the hole, and also like the framing of it was all awkward. See, when he dropped the fridge, it was very clear that Randy Orton wasn't there anymore, like, you know, he'd rolled out the way, because the fridge was not like in any way off the ground, because there was a body under it was like level to the ground, you could see it. And I'm like, well, Randy Orton's not there. Yeah, I don't get it. I just don't get it. So I just think that they kind of just sat right in the middle with it, instead of either going full on mental or just making it like some kind of cage match or something. I don't know. But I didn't like it. But I did not like it, because I think that they shouldn't try things like that. I just think that they're just not very good at it.
It's interesting that I remember when the final deletion came out and Adam Blompey and hated it with a fiery passion. He didn't think it was funny and all that sort of stuff. And he loved The House of Horrors. And I loved Final Deletion. And I think maybe the reason that I loved House of Horrors was because I had zero expectation going into it. I didn't think it was going to be good. I didn't think it was going to be exciting. But for whatever reason, as soon as they got to that environment of being in that house, I was just like, okay, Randy Orton's dressed as Corporate K and there's a ghost tractor, I'm in.
I just think it was a little bit embarrassing. Like, see, the thing is, you know, I would show people that are not into wrestling the thing of deletion. I'd be like, look, this is like some character guys.
Bonkers.
This thing. It's really funny. I would cringe to show them the House of Horrors, because I just thought it was a little bit hokey and embarrassing, and I'd just be like, I wouldn't want people to know that I watched this.
Yeah.
And I just was like, not so sure. Not so sure this was a good plan. But I guess if you liked it, then great.
Did any of it make you laugh?
No, that's the thing. But it didn't need to make me laugh, you know. You know, when the Undertaker was doing the corporate ministry stuff, you know, they were kidnapping people, you know, black weddings.
Do you think that's maybe, is it maybe, because I enjoyed it in the sense that it made me laugh because it was bad. Rather than me being invested in it because it was good. Maybe that's
like, if you want to make me laugh because you're bad, I want you to be so bad you're good. If you're just bad, then you're wasting my time. It's 2:30 in the morning, I want to go to bed. I don't want to watch this. The show was good, though.
If you had to pick your favourite part of the House of Horrors match out of any of it, what was the least bad part?
The ghost tractor. Because that gave me a false expectation that it was going to be good. Because I thought, oh, right. It was just a lack of... I mean, this is just Bray Wyatt all over, right?
Was it like half-pregnant kind of thing?
Well, no, the kind of the lack of explanation of anything. Like, you know, he just does stuff and there's never any stakes or consequences. Why? See, when he came outside and the house changed colour. Why? It went from blue to red. Did he draft Randy to Raw? What? I don't get it. I just was like, what just happened? Is he like locked in the house forever? So I'm a kind of an all-in kind of person. And I don't think it was all-in enough. I would have respected it more if it just went full-on crazy. But it didn't. So...
See, I think in my head I was just like, it had a ghost.
I didn't hate it, though. I didn't like, this is a piece of shit. I just was kind of going, they can't do this. Yeah, they've not figured out how to integrate this type of storytelling into their show yet. And I think it's a shame for Bray because he really needs it.
Yeah, for me, I was just like, it had a ghost tractor, Randy Orton was dressed as Corporate Kane, Bray put his arms through the wall and choked him out, and he had dishes in the sink and threw a fridge on top of Randy Orton. That was kind of all I needed. But my issue...
I didn't need anything from... I think the reason I'm not angry about it is because I don't care. I don't like Randy Orton at all. Just don't like him. And I don't really care about Bray. So there was no consequences to this for me as a fan. So the fact that it was rubbish didn't matter.
I guess the part that I didn't like was, I felt that it lost anything that it had. Whether you enjoyed it or didn't enjoy it, what it had going for it was completely lost once they got to the arena. Because what you did, on top of what was there before, how did Randy Orton beat Bray Wyatt to the arena? Makes no sense. Because it's not like... You can do a thing with The Undertaker where The Undertaker manages to somehow teleport himself, I guess. That's just part of his character. That you kind of buy that a little bit, or with Kane. But Randy Orton doesn't have that ability to do that. And then they got to the arena, and all it became at that point was Randy Orton trying to fend off Jinder Mahal and his cronies. And that's all it was. So what I liked about it, the stuff I liked about it at the house, or, you know... Bray Wyatt singing in the limousine because he kind of got his own way or whatever, all that was kind of taken away by what they did in the arena, which is why in my head I'm just like, I would just prefer to forget the arena part existed, because I think it was what they tried to do, whether it was successful to you or not, what they did try to do at the house, I think they lost all of it by what they tried to do in the arena.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think it just stood out like a sort of, like, genuinely, like, I almost don't want to bring this up because I don't want to get into it, but you know how, you know, you were quite passionate before about the kind of not liking the fact that, you know, not liking the sort of stuff that gets shared, like, you know, Joey Ryan's penis plex thing, or mm-hmm. when Kenny Omega did the match with the kid or whatever. You know, you've kind of spoken before about it, you didn't really like that kind of thing. And I'm just kind of like looking at this sort of going, is this not like just as bad, if not worse, in terms of making wrestling look really fake and phony and stupid?
I think because it's Bray Wyatt, I don't see it that way. I don't see him as, like, I think if it's Bray Wyatt, it's this guy that in the storyline, he's supposed to have this world where he's, you know, he's got a house and it's a house of horrors, and like, he's kind of like a new Undertaker in that way. But the issue, don't get me wrong, this is not somewhere I'd go, if I want to get my pal into wrestling, I'm going to show them the House of Horrors. It's not that, but I guess this worked more for me as a Bray Wyatt thing than anything he's really done since losing to Randy Orton at WrestleMania. But
yeah, and I didn't mind all this stuff in the build-up to WrestleMania.
That was Randy. Good.
I enjoyed that sort of stuff, but maybe you're right, maybe it is the element of linking it to the arena style. And then just sort of being like, okay, so now we're going to go into a match where the story is one guy wants to beat the other guy because he injured him and put his career on the line.
Well, because
in the previous match, the story was, there's a spooky house. You're like, it's such a tonal shift.
When you look at the two other matches that have really tried to do this, that I can remember, both happened in 1996, which was the Hollywood Backlot Brawl and the Boiler Room Brawl.
Both much, much successful.
But the thing with both of them is the in-ring parts of them lived up to the build-up parts that were in the pre-tape. Whereas with this one, I think that any part of what they had been able to do was kind of gone by what they actually did in the arena. Like, I thought what they did in the arena completely killed off Bray Wyatt. Like, why did Bray Wyatt need Jinder Mahal to help him? Like, he'd already beaten him. And Randy Orton's character is not the kind of character that you can explain that he was left for dead in a house. And then even though Bray Wyatt left first, Randy Orton somehow was there first before him.
Like, I got an Uber, bro.
Because his character doesn't suit that story. So
no, he doesn't. Randy Orton's character doesn't sit there. Very so.
Shite. Any final things you want to talk about? Any final parting words? You're not dying. You're not dying, but just
no. Although I'm so tired, I just want to say to people, I do feel bad. Like I've not been the most. I don't think I've been the sharpest today. I'm so tired. It's the end of a school week on a Friday, so I'm totally.
As well.
And yeah, because you made me drink all those drinks last night. But
we drank the Undertaker.
Yes, we did drink the Undertaker, a special white Russian. I can't remember all the ingredients, but you can see it on my Twitter. I guess we will do something again soon. I am currently looking across my desk at the Kamala bowling ball, which is shined up real nice, ready to be used when the time is right. But obviously, we'll do some regular episodes as well. So, yeah, thanks to everybody for tuning in and for sending in some questions for Kenny. And I hope you all have a good weekend.
So, with that thrilling sign off, I am.
Will you know something, brother?
Much better. Yeah, so where can people find you on Twitter, Robert?
If you want to be a part of the hashtag Hollywood Elite, you need to get on at Bertie_ITR. That's at BERTIE_ITR. And get involved in the chit chat there. That's where all the elite happenings are going on. I'll spend this weekend tweeting about wrestling and raging against the far right in the UK.
You can find me at KennyMC1985. Thank you very much to everybody, whether we're friends or you listen or we've worked together. Everybody that's messaged me, means a lot. I appreciate it. And hopefully people at What Culture still like me after all the stuff I've said, but fuck it, you need to say what you think. So yeah, and do support WCPW, their shows are good. It's still worth supporting. But you know, if you want to subscribe to a premium service, I'd suggest Patreon with us instead. It's better.
Yeah. And we will be announcing details of our first promotion very shortly, obviously.
Yeah. Obviously, it's a midget promotion. Let's not lie. Why would we have regular-sized performers? They're not as fun.
And Kenny's going to book himself be the champion because that's what he does, bro.
Thank you very much, everybody. We'll see you soon.
Don't be a mark for Jesus. Good night.
We some southern boys with the farmer strength. Ain't nobody man enough to feel the pain. And you can be next, you better give respect. Cause ain't nobody breaking this redneck. No hell.